because I have literally traveled the world and been on every continent, multiple nations, and it is true that some of the thought processes that are coming out of SF Berkeley truly are influencing the world.
You already know, it's the Joe Kingdom Perspective.
What in the world is going on? Welcome back, everybody, to the Joe Kingdom Perspective. This is the show that gives you a kingdom perspective on the Joe Rogan Experience so that you can identify where the kingdom is advancing in the most unexpected of places, through the most unexpected of people, and in the most unexpected of ways. It is our intent for this to be an encouragement to you today and to give you some new ways of looking at things. I'm here with the usual suspects. Dr. Tony Robinson, what's up?
Hey, y'all.
The Ryan Pena, what's happening, brother?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Good, good. And we're back with a special guest. This is your second appearance on the Joe Kingdom Perspective, the Eunica Jonathan. She is a brilliant theologian. We're actually all co-authoring a book right now. But your first book, Radical and Reckless, When God Disrupts Your Life, is available already on Amazon.com. You'll be able to find the link to that in the show notes. And it's a good read. And so what's up, my friend?
I'm just happy to be here, as always, hanging out with you guys. So,
yeah, well, we're happy that you're here. Yeah, come on. So we're going to be getting into that episode 2054, the Halloween episode. Ooh, came out on October 31st. Little inside joke that now you guys are in on. But this clip, we're going to be talking about what it looks like when the thought processes in a region are governed by a very small but very loud and amplified minority. It's an interesting conversation. Let's play this clip.
That's why I say San Francisco, Berkeley, it doesn't even extend to South San Francisco or even to Palo Alto. So SF Berkeley is the most far left, perhaps, you know, in a competition with Portland, but I'd say SF Berkeley is more far left even than Portland. But like literally in America, we're talking about an area that's maybe a 10-mile radius. And so the negative effects of a far-left ideology that is would be geographically limited to a 10-mile radius. That's like not, it's small, like the, so any bad effects of that ideology would be geographically constrained under normal circumstances and have been in the past. But when you have basically a technological megaphone, which was Twitter and social media in general, suddenly the far left are handed a megaphone to Earth, an incredibly powerful technology weapon that they themselves could not create, but they happened to be co-located with the technologists who created it by accident.
Is it shocking that more people don't understand how dangerous that is?
I think some people understand.
Some people do.
Some people understand. From the standpoint of some of the people who used to be at Twitter, that people are like, well, it's a big shift to the right. That is correct. It is a shift to the right because everything is to the right if you're far left. Everything is to the right. But how many far left people have actually been suspended or banned from Twitter, now X? Zero. So it's really just moved to the center, but from the perspective of the far left, it's moved to the right. So like everything's relative.
The difference in moderation.
Sorry, I should say it propagated that far left philosophy not just to America, but to everywhere on Earth.
You know, I just want to bear witness, to use a really churchy phrase. I don't know why that just came out of my mouth. Let me bear witness, my brothers and sisters. Awkward. To the truth that Elon just expressed there, because I have literally traveled the world and been on every continent, multiple nations, and it is true that some of the thought processes that are coming out of SF Berkeley truly are influencing the world on a world scale. And when you catch the truth that a principality, oftentimes in our charismatic communities, when we think principality, we think it's some type of a demon. But the word principality actually means archy, and it would be more accurate to discern that a principality is the origin from which a thought process or mindset flows from that influences the mindsets of a people group. And so that's really what is being addressed here, is what it looks like when a principality has amplification. And I'm not, listen, In case you missed what I just said, I'm not calling SF Berkeley demonic. I'm not calling the far left demonic. I'm saying that there is a place on the earth that a specific frame of thought flows from so powerfully that it influences the mindsets of people in a region. If you'd like more information on that, go to kingdomspiritualwarfare.com, get our masterclass on that, and it'll help clear that up, because I know that's probably a new thought for a lot of people who are listening right now. But when you identify that there is a geographical place on Earth from which a specific mindset is flowing that carries that level of influence, that's a principality. And so there are good principalities and bad principalities. And so, but it's so interesting that they have captured that concept. They've identified a phenomena at a higher level of intelligence and definition than most of the spiritual community has. And so I thought that was super fascinating. But Ryan, I see you like moving around, man. I know you got some thoughts on this.
Well, I just wanted to clarify, you know, because like you said, anytime we hear the word principality, immediately we go into this like negative, demonic stronghold type of thing, which is what I would have held to for many years, right? But really, a principality is neutral.
Yes.
And it all depends on who is sitting in that place of influence.
Yes.
Because even in scripture, Jesus is called principality.
Mm. No way.
No, he didn't. No, I'm just kidding.
My bad. Let's edit that out. So you know, a principality, you know, Jesus is the principality, right? So any seat of influence has to have somebody sitting in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that in the church, because we've demonized the world and we've demonized spheres of influence, we have withdrawn. And then when something negative or dark begins to sit in that place, then we say, oh, that's demonic, and that, and we come against it. But anytime you have light removed or light withdrawn from the room, you're going to see an automatic darkness, right? It's not because, you know, the Lord said this to me years ago. He said, Ryan, the condition of a city, and we could apply this to anything, the condition of a college, the condition of a sphere of influence. So the condition of a city is not a reflection of how powerful darkness is, but it's a reflection of how much light is lacking.
Yes. Yeah, come on. Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I begin to realize, man, you know what? Listen, Jesus said two things about us, at least two things, but two things that are relevant here. You are light and you are salt.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're light, if there's darkness, and we have this weird, I should say, we just have this idea that, well, it's just going to get darker. Mm-hmm. It's going to get worse. It's going to get darker. I would propose that if it does get darker, it's because the light didn't show up.
Mm.
Not because that was God's pre-planned, you know, purpose.
Mm-hmm.
No. And if things are decaying, it's because salt is not being added.
Come on. Yes.
Let me say this about salt too. You know, a couple of things about salt. Not only does it preserve, because that's always what we bring about the salt. Well, it preserves decay 100%, and we need that. But you know what else salt does? Man, it brings joy to life. It brings flavor to life. Mm-hmm. You know, eat a steak without salt versus eating it with salt, or food just in general. you know, and there's a massive difference. We're called to bring that flavor, that joy. So I just want to say that this whole thing about principalities and all that, it is all about who is seeing the value of that position and willing to step into that to be the light and to be the salt. If we don't, we create a vacuum.
Come on.
And another voice will take its seat.
This is why I'm so salty, bro. I've been trying to tell people, like, look. No, it's so true. And it's sad because if you look at the religious programming that has the highest amount of views, it's that content is so depressing. And it's like, well, no wonder, you know, that the church currently is not the most heard voice, because we're not sharing the good news.
Come on.
We're sharing this version of bad news. And I'll never forget the first time I heard you really touching on that, the darkness, right? Just being evidence of how much light is needed. And I caught that, the darkness in a place is not an indictment against the place. It's an invitation for light to show up.
That's right.
And so, come on, it's good stuff.
So good. When you were talking, I had a quick just like thought of a blind person, right? And it's like we give so much power over to darkness. Like we're like, oh, it's so dark. It's so dark. And it's this overwhelming thought process or lie, system of lies that people believe about the power and authority, which is no real authority that darkness has. And I had this quick glimpse of a blind person and said, if darkness has so much power, how is a blind person still alive and walking?
Wow.
And being? And they, I just saw them like walking with the little cane, and it's like they can still function. They're still in there, you know, it's like, so there is no power mm-hmm. in darkness that is not just like given over to it. So even when a blind person can still function in darkness, why can't we?
Right. I love that's perfect segue. Oh, there's so many good stuff here. But I want to segue for pick up where you left off, Doc, because it's like Psalm 139 says darkness is not dark to God.
Come on.
I mean, if we look at where, you know, creation began, it started off with darkness. Mm-hmm. Darkness was an opportunity for God to create and do amazing things, mm-hmm. right? So darkness isn't something for us to fear, and it's mm-hmm. not something that God doesn't step into all the time mm-hmm. and bring light into that. So that's one of the things that I got. But also blind people. Mm-hmm. Blind people can see
yes.
because of echolocation.
Yes, yes.
And it's sound. Mm-hmm. Sound waves that create images in their brain, mm-hmm. and that doesn't require light, but it lights up their brain. It mm-hmm. lights, they could literally see. And it's sometimes they could see better than we can see with our eyes.
Wow.
And it's just super cool. There's a lot of research, scientific research on that one. But then it also segues to the power of sound. So mm-hmm. I'm going to go there yeah. because of just the fact that the social media, it's, he was saying that it's a point where it's just a 10-mile radius. Mm-hmm. It's a small place, it's a small location, a small group of people, right? And yet because of their sound and because of the agreement of people with it, mm-hmm. we have empowered that small voice through the megaphone of social, right? Mm-hmm. What we can do, right? The phenomenon of sociology, which is the realities and what people think and what people say. If people say something is good that is not good, and everybody says that thing that is not good is good, then I'm going to be the only one out if I'm going to say, well, but it's not good. And I'm going to check my, you know, am I sane? Am I not sane? Everybody else here says it's good. Then I guess it must be good. Mm-hmm. Right. So all of those things agreeing with that causes that small group of people, that 10-mile radius, to be so powerful that it influences nations. It influences like the whole world. And that's the power of sound, the mm-hmm. power of our agreement mm-hmm. with things that, you know, really don't have that much authority, but because we have authority mm-hmm. and we give and lend our authority to that. Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's amazing.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. You know, everything has a frequency to it. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, even, you know, you look at just on a basic level, look at the experiments done on plants with different types of music, mm-hmm. right. And the way that they would thrive. And because of the frequency, mm-hmm. the frequency which was released through the sound. And, you know, negativity has a frequency, mm-hmm. right? Negativity has a voice. And that voice, that negativity, will cause people to be stifled, to stop, mm-hmm. to sit, to do nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm telling you it is God's will for all of these negative things, well then why would I even pray against it? Why would I do anything to better my world when mm-hmm. I think it's supposed to get worse mm-hmm. and it's supposed to be darker? And we'll pull some random verse out of Isaiah 60 and say it's going to get darker, but it's going to be glorious for the church. And what we're insinuating is that God loves the church more than he loves society. Mm-hmm. That's a lie. I mean, he is in love with all humanity equally because he is love. Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For God to love you 100% and me 99%, it's impossible.
Come on.
He can't do it because it's mm-hmm. not an attribute. Mm-hmm. It's actually the essence of who he is. Mm-hmm. God doesn't know how to love with anything less than his entire being.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't love the person who's strung out on crack right now less than he loves the person who's fasted for 40 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can't earn any of that. But here's the thing that I wanted to say on this is that there is a greater frequency than negativity.
Mm-hmm.
Negativity stops things. A greater frequency than negativity is hope. Because hope will generate action.
Mm-hmm.
Hope will generate new ways of thinking. Hope will generate solutions. See, it's actually a more powerful force to move something than it is for something just to sit still and stay in its stagnant state.
Mm-hmm.
It requires more force to get something into motion, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want to say this. Those who have the most hope will have the most influence.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be the leaders of hope, yep, for the nations, for society, for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And if we will begin to give ourselves to hope, which is an attribute of the kingdom.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, hopelessness is not an attribute of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And yet how many believers are in hopelessness?
Correct.
So when we begin to understand hope, oh my goodness, listen, we will become one of the most powerful voices.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The body of Christ will become such a powerful voice and will raise up other voices of hope, yeah, that will begin to shift things, mm-hmm, in society. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So good.
Come on. All right. Let's hit the second clip here.
The point is from my standpoint, that is that XFK Twitter should represent the sort of collective consciousness of humanity. So now that means that there are going to be views on there that you don't like or disagree with. But that's humanity. So are you going to exclude them or not? Now, I mean, if somebody, you know, breaks the law, then the account is suspended. I mean, if they actively advocate murder, then the account is suspended. We do have what we call like the kind of United Nations exclusion rule, which is that you can have, say, the Ayatollah who, you know, would prefer that Israel didn't exist, for example. But he's allowed to go to the UN building in New York.
Mm.
In fact, generally officials from Iran do in fact go to the UN building in New York. Even though they are a heavily sanctioned country, so I think that there's merit to having, just like there's some merit to the UN. One can disagree with the UN, and I think we shouldn't have a world government that we bow down to. But in fact, that's risky for civilization. But I think you do want to have the leaders of countries represented on social media. You want to hear what they have to say, even if what they say is terrible.
I think that is true across the board. And I think one of the things you just said that's very important is that's humanity. And it's, yeah, I think it's important that a social media platform, especially the biggest one, represents humanity so we understand what we're talking about. Because we have this distorted idea of what people think and want and need because everyone only exists inside this ideological bubble and anything outside of that bubble gets censored.
Yes.
Then that literally changes the tone of the entire country.
Yes.
Changes what people think is okay and not correct, okay, makes people feel differently.
Yes.
It's not humanity. It's different. It's a very forced version of humanity.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whole point of free speech, free speech is only relevant. The First Amendment is only relevant if you allow people you don't like to say things you don't like. Because if you like it, you don't need a First Amendment. So the whole point of free speech is that, frankly, even people you hate say things you hate. Because if people you hate can say things that you hate, that means that they can't stop you from saying what you want to say.
Right.
Which is very, very important.
Right, but the problem with Twitter is it was not the case. It was
correct.
It was people that you hate couldn't say.
Anyone they didn't like, they censored.
Yeah.
Or what's called de-amplify.
You know, I had a mentor that really helped me learn how to begin to move in the high levels of global governments and in nations, et cetera. And he had this specific thing that he would do, not all of the time, but when it was the right time and the right place, he would show up, he would be in a meeting with a government official, and he would sometimes do this. He would say, you know, I'm a man of faith, and I know you have faith. And he might be sitting with someone who is Muslim or Buddhist or whoever. He was like, I don't really care, you know, what their faith is. And he would say, why don't we open this meeting with a word of prayer? And he would say, how about you pray to your God, and then I'll pray to my God. It'll be awesome. And so, you know, they would pray, and then he would pray. And his perspective was, you know, I know who my God is. Mm-hmm. I know that I am coming as the voice of life, the voice of love, the voice of truth, all of those things. And so he was not threatened by the person sitting across from the table articulating and inviting a communication with whoever, you know, their belief system was tied to, because he was like, because then I'm going to pray. Mm-hmm. And if I dignify their belief system and give honor to where they are at this time, then that enables me to bring to the table a higher level of articulation, of communication, of, you know, an awareness of the presence of God, right? We all know God is everywhere all the time. I love what Rod posted the other day, our good friend Rod Williams. He's one of the professors in SOK. He said, we do not invoke the presence of God. We become aware of it. Yes. And so that's what was happening at that table. You know, there's, you know, some religious communities that would be like, oh my gosh, like, why would you allow someone to pray to, you know, some other lowercase g God or whatever? It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, we are simply bringing an awareness of the true, loving, good, kind, loving Heavenly Father to the table. And so it doesn't really matter if someone else has another opinion, you know, and is bringing awareness to something else. Because if that enables us to bring in an awareness to the love of God, then that's a win right there. And I always thought that was genius. I've kept that as a tool in my tool belt as well.
I mean, that is a telltale sign of love, right? The space for choice. We see that with God in the very beginning. He was comfortable to give humanity choice.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
Because that's what love is. Love gives choice. An ideology without love, you know, doesn't give you choice. You know, you're censored. And I love what Joe said, censorship is not humanity. Mm-hmm. Love is humanity, and therefore choice is humanity. And I also love the fact that, like, Elon basically said, you, because they're humanity, you know, are you gonna just cancel them? Like, it's an expected thing for him. Like, what are you gonna do? Even if they disagreed with you, but they're humanity. Like, you cannot not devalue them. I mean, you cannot devalue them just because you don't agree with them. Humanity has to be the number one thing that you value above all else, including your ideology, including what you think. So I thought that was really cool.
It is.
What you were saying, Dub, it reminded me of how for so long, I know in my life, like many years ago, there was the fear of contamination. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, you know, I'm working at this store and they're playing worldly music.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness.
And you got to go home and wash all the filth off every day.
You have to de-slime.
Yeah, you got to decontaminate, right? And because we had this idea that if it wasn't Christian music, it has some kind of demonic influence, some type of sensuality or sin or whatever, you're going to get contaminated and all of that. And
Gaithers only, bro.
Oh my.
Too far. I'm sorry.
Way too far.
That's fine. They're not watching this. It's fine.
Probably not. I think they would have been offended a long time ago.
Episode one.
Oh my goodness. But the point is that we get we have a lot of pre-cross thinking, mm-hmm. which was rooted in religious systems. And so under the religious system of the Old Testament, you had leprosy, which was a disease that represented sin because it was easily contagious. It was a flesh-eating disease. It was going to cause death. And you had this disease of leprosy as a picture of sin in the Old Testament. And so there were religious laws that, man, I mean, you imagine, you're just walking down in town, minding your own business, and a leper trips and brushes up against you, and according to the law, according to the legal system, you are unclean. Mm-hmm. And so it was showing that power of you know, the sin to the religious mindset, right? But yet, and we've talked about this so many times in SOK and in our master classes, yet you see Jesus, mm-hmm. Rabbi Jesus, mm-hmm. who knew all of those customs and all of those rituals and all of those religious laws. When a leper comes to him to be healed, Jesus could have said, whoa, whoa, hey, buddy, that's far enough. Just right there, just be healed, right? But no, what does he do? You know that because that man was a leper, he had zero physical contact with family, with friends, no contact. You know, we were made for contact. We were mm-hmm. made for connection, right? And no embrace, no kiss. I mean, that's a cultural thing, right? Even mm-hmm. to this day, you go over there and you get a kiss on the cheek and whatever, mm-hmm. and nothing like that. This man, we don't know how long. Had never had physical contact. Jesus was not only healing the disease of the body, but the sickness of the soul.
Yes. Mm.
And he touches the man, knowing that under the religious system, I'm going to be unclean. But that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When Jesus touches the man, he becomes clean. Jesus wasn't contaminated by this man's disease. This man was contaminated by Jesus's righteousness.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
You know, and so we need to have this mentality. We've been so fearful yep. of any opinion that's contrary or any thought process or anything that's going on. And so we became exclusive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. God is not exclusive. Mm-mm. God is inclusive, drawing yes. the world to himself, 2 mm-hmm. Corinthians 5 says. And so we need to start developing that mindset mm-hmm. and stop excluding because I don't see the same. Mm-hmm. And man, I'm scared you're going to contaminate me.
Right?
No, I'm the contaminator. Mm-hmm. You're the contaminator. Amen? Mm-hmm. So.
Yes. Good. I love that. And I love the incorporating the prayer aspect of inviting them to pray and then to even allow you to pray first, which is a posture of humility, because mm-hmm. if I say, you know what, you're a man of faith, I'm a man of faith, let's just both pray to our God, but I'm gonna start this off because I know my God is the, you know, superior mm-hmm. God, and I need to dominate and put your God underneath, right? But the willing to even allow that prayer, them to pray first, was a posture of humility, and humility can only come from love. Mm-hmm. And because it's honor and love go hand in hand. And so when we operate from honor, we're operating as the extension of love. So honor begets love. Using my old King James language, love begets honor, and both of those things begets dignity. So love and honor will dignify you with the opportunity to hear your, to have your say. Even if I don't agree with what you're saying, I'm not afraid of being contaminated by what you're speaking, but I'll dignify you with the honor of having your say. And not only will I dignify you with it, I'll actually hear you out. I don't just mm-hmm. listen. I want to hear what you have to say, because when I just listen, I'm just like, okay, she done yet, he done yet. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I can make my point. But when I'm hearing you, I can know where your heart is, and then we can have a heart-to-heart conversation that invites us into community. Because when you can see inside of community, because what Jesus did, I think, Ryan, is that in not rejecting the leper but inviting them in, that touch part, that's powerful, mm-hmm. because you re-invited him, you reconnected him to community, mm-hmm. and that community changed everything.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Heck yeah. What's another insight you pulled from this clip, my friend?
Well, one of the other insights that I had there was just again with regards to disagreement, like being open to disagreement, and how an ideology doesn't have room for it. And it will always have a negative effect. An ideology, I don't care what that is, will always have a negative effect because it doesn't give room for disagreement. for opinions, for discussion. And again, that's relationship, that's intimacy, right? And like what I mentioned before with regards to Genesis, like God created room for disagreement. You know, he said, these are the choices. Like, I hope you choose life. That's in agreement with what I want. But here's another option if you decide to disagree, even though I don't want that for you because it's not a happy ending. But I'm going to give you space to explore. I'm going to give you space to make a choice so that the choice that you do make is a choice that you, it's truly from within you. And you don't have to be afraid of that, right? And so, because God's like, I got you anyway. Regardless of the choice that you make, I got you anyway. And that for me was amazing. And that's what love is. You know?
Yeah.
That's so good. I'm going to say something that may not be true as far as the etymology of the words. So I want to make that clear. This is just a tool linguistically that has helped me frame some thoughts. Okay. So for me, there's a difference between an opinion and a perspective. And so for me, the way I see it is like, if I have an opinion, it's like, oh, let me pin what I think on you. Right. Let me like enforce my opinion on you. Whereas a perspective is, hey, like we're both looking at this pin from a different angle. Your perspective is different from mine. Let me share my perspective with you rather than enforce my opinion upon you.
So, right.
And when we dignify people with, hey, you know, we may just be, we may be actually even seeing the same thing, but just from a different angle. And so I can maybe learn from a perspective when I might feel controlled by an opinion. And so just wanted to share that little tool that's been helpful to me.
That's good.
Yeah. You know, I like what you said, Unica, about ideology. And I was thinking about this, you know, the difference between ideology and truth. Ideology is a rigid thing. But truth is a living thing.
Wow.
And so truth, when I'm focused on truth, man, there are some things that I'm going to be growing in my perspective, in my thought process. And because truth is not a rigid dogmatic ideology. Truth is a person, first of all. Right? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, right? Truth is a spirit. Jesus says that about Holy Spirit, Spirit of truth. And truth is living and active and, dare I say, growing in our thinking and our understanding. And this is where I think the church has to begin to. Now, I'm not saying like, well, you know, we're going to begin to realize that Jesus, you know, there are core beliefs that we know are true, regardless of where our thinking begins to go. Right. We know Jesus is. Part of the Trinity, incarnation, all, you know, all of those things. We know there are foundational truths. But I want to just challenge us not to be stuck to a religious, dogmatic, stagnant ideology, but to live in the power of growing in truth. I mean, even Paul says, grow in your knowledge of God, growing in truth and understanding, right?
Yeah, I like that. And one of the things too that I want to tag on to that is because truth is life-giving. So how do we know, like, you know, we're saying, well, we know these are foundational truths. So I'm going to kind of be that person that's asking, you know, our viewers saying, well, then how do you know that those are foundational truths? Well, because those foundational truths give us life. Like when we hold on to those truths, we actually gain life. We actually grow and experience life that's abundant, that's freeing, that's so joyful. Like all of those things you will experience when we hold on to those foundational truths of who Jesus is and all of that, right? But ideologies, anything that's not truth, will cause us to go in on ourselves and to like internally combust, you know, because it's a handicap. It's a true limitation of what we can potentially be because it doesn't want us to grow. It wants us to stay there. And so, yeah, that's how we know if it's truth or an ideology.
I like that. Super good. All right, my friends. Well, I wish we had more time, but this was such a great time. Utica, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, you brought so much value. I super appreciate it. I want to touch on again, for all of you listeners, Utica's book, Radical and Reckless, is out already on Amazon.com. You'll find a link to that in the show notes. So get you some of that goodness. I promise you that if you will read this book, it will begat you a new level of revelation concerning the love of God.
Yes,
it's
will.
Good stuff. And so thank you for hanging with us, my friends, and we will see you next episode.
Bye.
You already know, it's the Joe Kingdom Perspective.